Blog Talk Radio.
Shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer.
Welcome, welcome, everyone, to Showtime Radio Time. I am Sweet Rascally Rabbit, broadcasting to you live in your sweet, beautiful ears, no matter how ugly you think they are. I do apologize for being late, everyone. I thought I would be able to finish this one video before the show started, and then I realized, oops, I didn't check how much time was left. Well, I mean, I was able to finish the video, but I was ended up being, you know, 20 seconds late. Oh, no! All right, so I'm actually really excited about today. I am going to be starting a book, one that I have not written. I'm actually really excited about this. I've actually looked it up, and there is a woman who... Okay, sorry, let me tell you about the book. The book is called The Clue in the Jewel Box by Carolyn Keene. It is a Nancy Drew book. Number 20 in the series. And I could be wrong, but I think I have the second edition, because I know for a fact that I do not have the first edition. Let me look it up, because I know who did the ghost writing. No clue in the... Come on. There we go. Clue in the Jewel Box. Let me put editions. Let's see. No, I don't want the Kindle edition. Stop it. I don't know how many editions there are, but I do know that I do not have the first edition, because the first edition is like a blue cover with, and the title of the book has like white outlines. It's actually a pretty neat cover. And the edition after that, I think is the one I have, is actually a really close likeness. I think the only thing that's different as far as like the actual exactness of it is basically Nancy's outfit and her hair. Plus she's wearing a necklace. Well, I mean, well, there's a whole bunch of different things about the cover, but just the likeness of it is pretty similar. And the ghost writer of this book is Mildred Augustine Wirtz Benson. I really like her middle name, just because it's close to what my last name is. But she's actually really good. I did a little bit of rehearsing, and I mean, it's not what I like, just because it's not modern. It's not the modern grammar or punctuation, but it's a really good book so far, and I think you guys might like it. Again, the book is called The Clue in the Jewel Box. I'm actually really looking forward to this. The Nancy Drew series is written by Carolyn Keene, but as we all know, Carolyn Keene is just a pseudonym, a fake name. There are a bunch of different authors who write these books. And again, her name is Mildred Augustine Wirtz Benson. You would probably be familiar of her as Mildred Benson. She's actually ghostwritten a lot of books. And it turns out she's written her own books as well, which is pretty cool. There's only four books. It's a series called Ruth Darrow, because all four of the books have Ruth Darrow in the title. Ruth Darrow in the Air Derby, Ruth Darrow in the Fire Patrol, Ruth Darrow in Yucatan. Ooh, really? And Ruth Darrow in the Coast Guard. Ooh. She died at age 96. That's a pretty long life, huh? And so let me go ahead and explain The Clue in the Jewel Box. Let me go ahead and just read the plot. It's basically the same thing that I used in the description today. An antique dealer's revelation about a former queen's priceless heirloom leads Nancy on a series of exciting yet dangerous adventures. Madame Alexandra, who is living in exile in River Heights, asks Nancy to search for her long-lost grandson. Using an old faded photo of the prince at age 4, Nancy begins her search. A secret in the old jewel box helps Nancy unveil a slick imposter and bring the mystery to its thrilling conclusion. You know, I think I might rewrite that description. Because, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it pretty much covers everything that happens in the first chapter. Well, not everything, but it's basically, it's pretty simple. It's a pretty simple book as far as, you know, the first chapter. I'm actually going to be reading the whole chapter. Excuse me. Sorry. I've had a long day. I got quite a bit of sleep last night, but for some reason when I woke up, I wasn't fully rested. That's usually the case, though, for people who have a whole bunch of stress in their life. One of these days, I am going to be stress-free. At least free enough to be fully rested when I wake. Anywho, I actually had a little bit of a tough time picking out a song to end the show, just because... I don't know if you know this, but I try to pick songs that are that closely relate to what happened in the reading for that day. And so, seeing as how delicate the first chapter is, I thought I could try to find a song that I have on my computer that has little light sounds of the music with, you know, innocent message. But unfortunately, I couldn't find one, and I just chose a song that I actually really like and has a pretty good message to it. So I think I should go ahead and just start reading, considering the time of the show right now. So let me pull out the book. This is The Clue in the Jewel Box by Carolyn Keene, otherwise known as Mildred Benson. Oh, so cool. I'm so excited. All right. Clue in the Jewel Box, Chapter 1, A Stolen Wallet. No, a silver pen isn't exactly what I want, Nancy Drew explained patiently to the jewelry salesman in the department store. The slim, attractive girl waited for the clerk to show her something else. Not discouraged, he reached beneath the counter, bobbing up with a small tissue-wrapped package. Now here is something you'll like, he declared confidently. This handsome jewel box came in only a few hours ago. Nancy, hopeful of finding a suitable birthday gift for her father, eagerly watched the man unwrap the box. Proudly, he displayed a jewel case of intricate design.
Oh, it is lovely,
she exclaimed, her blue eyes lighting.
But I believe my father would prefer something less showy.
He could use this for jewelry, or put it on his desk, the clerk said persuasively. This little silver case is a clever imitation of a famous one owned by a ruler in Europe 2 centuries ago.
At the word imitation, Nancy's pretty face clouded slightly. She had hoped to give her father something original and unusual, not a gift which might be seen in duplicate in many places.
Well, I hardly know,
she began doubtfully.
The original box has a strange history, resumed the salesman.
Well aware of Nancy's reputation as an amateur detective, he hopes to capture her interest with hints of mystery.
The first owner of it was a king heartily disliked by his subjects. One night he was spirited away, and
Nancy heard no more of the romantic tale, for a woman customer, evidently annoyed at the storytelling, tapped on the glass counter.
Young man, she said impatiently, will you please wait on me?
Oh, do so, Nancy urged politely. I believe I'll think this over anyway.
The clerk, disappointed by his failure to make a sale, turned to the other customer. Nancy thanked him and left. She entered an elevator which took her to the floor where there was a tea room. Here she was to have luncheon with Bess Marvin and George Fane, two girls who also lived in River Heights.
The latter enjoyed her boyish name. The two, who were cousins, frequently shared Nancy's adventures. They had not arrived, so she seated herself in a comfortable chair of the lounge to wait for them.
Oh, dear, murmured a voice almost at her elbow.
Turning her head, Nancy saw that the seat beside her own was occupied by an aristocratic elderly lady, and a dark veil screened a sad, once beautiful face, but it was the pallor of the creamy skin that held the girl's attention. Obviously, the woman was ill.
"Can I help you?"
Nancy asked quickly. The woman fumbled in a beaded purse, then shakily handed her a card. It bore the name Alexandra and an address, 47 Downing Street.
"Please take me to my home," she whispered. "I feel so ill."
Nancy hesitated, not because she was unwilling to help, but because for an instant she wondered if she might become the victim of a hoax. Although the stranger used perfect English, she spoke with a slight accent. Before Nancy could reply, her chums, Bess and George, entered the waiting room. As soon as they heard the woman's request, both girls declared that they would postpone their luncheon.
"We'll help you take Mrs. Alexandra to her home,"
Bess said at once.
"But how shall we get her there? By taxi?"
Nancy nodded as she assisted the elderly lady to her feet. The smile with which she was rewarded immediately erased any doubts in the girl's mind that this person intended to bring any harm to her.
"You will not regret your kindness to me,"
the woman murmured. The three girls made slow progress to the street, encouraging Mrs. Alexandra whenever her strength faltered. Summoning a taxi, they assisted her into it and gave the Downing Street address to the driver.
"Thank you. Thank you,"
the panting woman murmured, and slumped against the cushions in a faint.
"Get to Downing Street as fast as you can,"
Nancy instructed the driver. As the cab sped away, the girls chafed the stranger's hands and fanned her. On the floor lay the beaded purse, from which had tumbled several articles. One of these was a jeweled monogrammed bottle of smelling salts. Its presence suggested to Nancy that its owner was subject to frequent fainting spells.
"She's coming to now,"
Bess said a moment later as the woman's eyes fluttered.
"As soon as she gets home, she'll be all right."
Relieved, Nancy reached down to pick up the beaded purse and its scattered contents. Almost at her feet lay a gold-framed miniature of a little boy in a sailor suit. She stared at the quaint picture, then turned it over. In the back of the case, under glass, were several locks of hair held in place with tiny clasps set with rubies.
"This is very unusual," thought Nancy.
She had no opportunity to show the miniature to Bess or George. As the cab drew up in front of a small house, she replaced all the articles in the purse and turned to assist the elderly passenger.
"Can you walk if we help you?"
she inquired anxiously.
"Yes, I think so."
With Bess and George supporting her on either side, she took a few tottering steps. Nancy paid the cabman, then darted ahead to ring the doorbell. She feared the house might be deserted, but to her relief, the door was opened by a middle-aged servant in spotless white cap and apron.
"Oh!"
the maid cried when she saw her mistress being half-carried up the walk.
"Madame Marie has had another of her spells."
She opened the door wide and indicated that the woman was to be laid on a brocade-covered couch in the living room.
"Shall we call the doctor?"
George inquired, as the servant scurried about in search of medicine and needed articles.
"No, it will not be necessary,"
the patient whispered, trying to smile.
"Anna understands my ailment. She will care for me."
It was true that the maid seemed unusually capable in attending her mistress. With loving hands, she made the woman comfortable and gave her a hot beverage, which quickly revived her. For several minutes, Nancy had been noticing the unusual furnishings of the room. On the walls hung several tapestries which seemed too elegant for an ordinary house. Sorry, guys. There were beautiful pieces of furniture covered with hand-embroidered silks. On a table and a desk stood rare objects of glass and porcelain. This is almost like a museum, thought Nancy. One piece completely captured the girl's interest. It was a pink enamel Easter egg, which stood on a tiny gold pedestal. Its rounded cover was encrusted with delicate gold work.
Did you ever see anything like it?
Bess whispered in awe. Hang on, guys. Her words were not meant for Mrs. Alexandra, who nevertheless heard them. Raising herself to a sitting position, she remarked that the Easter egg was brought to America from abroad.
Madame Marie, you must not exert yourself,
the servant warned her mistress.
The attack is passing. I feel quite myself now. Anna, I must talk to these girls who have been so kind.
The words, quietly spoken, were regarded by the maid as an order. Bowing low, she left the room. Most graciously, Mrs. Alexandra thanked Nancy and her friends for their help and carefully wrote their names in an attractive little address book. Observing their interest in the art objects about them, the woman pointed out several which were inside a cabinet. Among these was a silver box that looked very much like the one at the jewelry counter in the department store. Interesting. Nancy wondered if this might be the original about which the salesman had spoken. Almost apologetically, the girl spoke of her search for a distinctive birthday gift for her father.
Of course, I never could afford anything so rare as these lovely pieces, she concluded with a sigh.
You might be surprised,
returned Mrs. Alexandra, smiling rather mysteriously.
Why not go to my friend, Mr. Faber, who is mentioned that I sent you. I think you will find exactly what you want, and at a reasonable price, too.
She has summoned Anna, asking for one of the antique dealer's business cards. On it, she wrote a message. The girls now bade the woman goodbye, fearing that more conversation would tax her strength.
Wasn't it exciting?
Bess asked as soon as the three friends reached the street.
And didn't you just love Mrs. Alexandra? She's so gracious and charming.
And her treasures are remarkable, Nancy said in a low voice.
I was especially impressed with the Easter egg.
Right now, I'll take my eggs in omelet form without gold trimmings, chuckled George.
When do we have luncheon?
Oh, that appetite of yours.
Sorry, let me try that again.
Oh, that appetite of yours. Nancy teased. Let's go on to Faber's shop. Perhaps we'll pass a restaurant on the way.
A rather long walk brought the three girls back to the center of the River Heights business section. Presently, they turned down a side street, and Nancy stopped to look again at the card Mrs. Alexandra had given her. Just then, a small, wiry man had darted from an alleyway, brushing past the girls. He glanced anxiously over his shoulder, then, with short, hurried steps, entered a shabby-looking apartment house.
That fellow acts as if he were running away from someone,
Nancy remarked, turning to glance down the street.
A crowd has gathered at the corner, too.
Retracing their steps, the girls joined the excited crowd, group. In the center of the circle stood a young man, angrily accusing a second young man of having picked his pocket.
That's not so, the other defended himself. I was walking along the street, minding my own business, when you grabbed me. I never saw your wallet.
The argument waxed warmer. What? The argument waxed warmer, and a police officer arrived to ask what was wrong. Amid the confusion, Nancy edged closer.
Excuse me, she said to the policeman. I saw a young man who looks like this one running up the street.
There, cried the alleged culprit triumphantly.
I guess that proves my innocence. I've been mistaken for the real thief.
Which way did the thief to the fellow go? The policeman asked Nancy.
She directed him to the old four-story apartment building, and he hurried off. The three girls, the young man whose wallet had been stolen, the accused man, and many curious people followed to see what would happen. Scarcely had the policeman entered the building than those on the street were startled to see a figure appear on a fire escape above an alley. Light as a cat, the man leaped to the ground and fled.
Wow.
That's the fellow, cried Nancy.
The heavyset officer came back and hurtled after the thief, commanding him to halt. Instead, the young man squeezed through a gap between two buildings and vanished.
Look, Nancy exclaimed alertly. He dropped the wallet.
Gosh dang it. Whether or not the thief deliberately had thrown away the leather case, she could not know. A moment later, the policeman rejoined the group and presented the wallet to its owner.
Sorry I couldn't overtake that fellow, he said regretfully. I'll make a complete report to Central Station. Your name, please?
Francis Baum, the other replied. Never mind the reports. I am satisfied to get my property back.
Nothing was taken from it.
The young man carefully examined the contents. Nancy, who stood close beside him, saw parts of a business card. Her photographic mind made a note of THSON, Tur Street.
My money is all here, the owner of the wallet assured the policeman. Thanks for your trouble.
Francis Baum and the man he had accused walked away. The officer went off to make his reports, and the crowd dispersed. Bess and George likewise would have gone on had not Nancy held them back.
Just a minute, she pleaded, starting down the alley. I want to search the ground between these two buildings. You don't think the thief is still there?
George scoffed, following reluctantly.
No, but I thought I saw something fall from the wallet when it was dropped. Wouldn't the policeman have found it?
Bess protested.
If ever we're to have luncheon, here is something against the wall,
Nancy interrupted excitedly. She stooped to pick it up. Her exclamation of wonderment caused Bess and George to move closer. Nancy held up a slightly soiled photograph of a small boy wearing a white sailor suit.
Girls, this is the same child whose picture was in Mrs. Alexandra's miniature,
she cried, her voice perplexed.
Do you suppose she is related to Francis Baum?
I haven't the slightest idea, replied Bess, shrugging her shoulders.
And look, there's a hamburger stand. George and I have an engagement at 3 o'clock, so we ought to eat.
Please do, begged Nancy. I want to go to Faber's first and also turn in this picture to the police. Her chums left to get a quick meal. Nancy went on alone and resumed her search for the antique shop. She came to it at last, an inconspicuous but neat little place on a quiet street. A bell jingled musically as she entered. From a rear workroom emerged a little man with stooped shoulders. Smiling a welcome, he asked what he might do for the young lady. Nancy explained that she was looking for a gift for her father and handed him the business card with Mrs. Alexander's message on it.
Oh, Madame sent you herself,
the shop owner beamed, speaking with a noticeable accent.
Ah, yes, I am honored to serve you. I may have something in my humble shop which will please your father.
The little man moved briskly about the cluttered room, shaking his head as he examined various objects.
No, I have nothing suitable, he said at length. You must give me a few days.
Before leaving the shop, Nancy decided to show the man the photograph she had found near the apartment house. She inquired if he knew whose picture it might be.
Old Mr. Faber stared at the child in the tailor's suit, his hands trembling as he took the photograph. Where did you get this? Tell me, please, tell me at once, he asked tensely.
And unfortunately, I have to stop there. I'm already over my time. Ah! That is actually the end of chapter one. I'm going to have to bid you all adieu. So I hope you all have a great morning, afternoon, evening, or night, wherever you are in the world. I am Sweet Rascally Rabbit saying goodbye with Someone Like You, sung by Nick Viterra. Bye, everyone.
Sometimes it lasts in love, and sometimes it hurts.